us, you were giving us the grim record. I mean, and the answer can't just be, oh, well, let's read the reasonable record again, because the reasonable record had no impact 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when people were more radical. Why should we assume that...
people used to be much more active than they are right now.
Right,
that's why
so why would reading the record now have more of an impact? And it seems to me we need some new approaches to the situation in order to make these kinds of changes.
Well, we need momentum, and that's the problem,
yeah.
Because you cannot have a movement without momentum. Mm-hmm. And there are so few people that stand up to the plate.
Mm-hmm.
And if most people would come out of the closet, those assistant DAs, those police, those doctors, those surgeons, those computer programmers, those millionaires, and just come out and admit, they go home and they like to burn a bowl.
Mm-hmm.
If they could come out of the closet, it would legitimize it. But until those people come out, it's going to stay illegal. We're working on rescheduling cannabis. Because
right
now it's scheduled with, scheduled with heroin, morphine.
Which to me is not any real big improvement.
We have to get it into
better.
The medical community, though, Robert. It's not a law enforcement issue. Law enforcement should not be involved
again,
with this.
Again, the problem is you're saying, you know, what everyone listening to the show knows to be true. The problem is that we don't know how to do this.
Well, it is being worked on. As I was telling you about this statewide registry system, did I get off the track earlier? I know I did start to tell you about it. It's actually it's going to be a countywide, throughout the state, administered by county health departments. It'll be a voluntary program. People can voluntarily go register with the health department, get their picture taken, get a card, and be registered. And be legitimate in this county, and law enforcement is not going to bother them because it's going to be a medical issue. We need the legislature to work on this. We need them to provide guidance to law enforcement.
You've got to tell that to D.E. Smith, who's currently rotting in a federal jail in Sacramento.
Yeah, they're
in the first federal prosecution of a very small, essentially a small number of marijuana plants for D.E. up in, what is it, Trinity County?
Right, yeah, they have a lot of problems up that way, Yuba County.
I mean,
Trinity County.
The federal government is, you know, I don't know if he's using this, you know, he obviously has Proposition 215. The federal government refused to even let it into evidence.
Because we went right back to states' rights over the federal rights.
What I'm saying is, doesn't the federal government here have the power to essentially, you know, ignore these registries and prosecute anyway?
That's exactly what our governor just said today. He said this won't even get to the legislature as long as it's against federal law.
I'm not saying this isn't a good idea.
But I want to show you that people are working on this. This is, you know, we're not a bunch of slouches. There are good, reasonable, intelligent people working on getting this done, and it will get done.
I wonder if these good, reasonable, intelligent people might not be better advised to start smoking in front of the courthouses or doing fully informed jury amendment nullification.
You can't do activism when you're locked up.
Or, yeah, you sure can if there are enough of you. It was done historically at different times. Of course, it requires a more massive commitment, and it doesn't. It may not be the time that people...
See, I think, unfortunately, many people are lambs, and they are just following. They're waiting. They're waiting for the leaders to come forward, and this is what the problem is. We don't have enough leadership here.
Well, I think there should be, as I said, I continue to look at this. The court system is really at the center of this here, because it's where the people are coming who are being victimized by this drug war, most obviously. I mean... I think activists like yourself should have, and not like you, you're running around doing all the work you have to do every day to keep people surviving, you know, and out of pain that are relying on you. But people concerned about this drug war, when put in time, I think could do well to do it round the clock, kind of tabling at the courthouse, where they would get in touch with people who are being victimized, draw them into activism. And again, I think if everybody who is subject to a marijuana prosecution demanded a jury trial, that courts would stop dead within a week. They couldn't do it. It would stop. This court works on the fact that 95% is plea bargained. So it seems to me that's the weakest link. You can talk about the registries, you can talk about the legislature, and I think that's good.
What we really need is for people to write to Janet Reno and Donna Shalala. That's what we need
to do. That a few harsh letters to Donna and Janet would
to good old girls.
They'll certainly change their opinion and change their perspective.
What we really need to do is figure out how we're going to be able to provide safe, affordable, and clean cannabis. We don't want the government to do it. We know there's a handful right now of patients who accept.
That's not really a problem. I mean, the problem is you have government agencies preventing this from happening. That is the problem.
Right. Sabotaging our progress. Right. That's true. By the federal indictments, the clubs closing themselves down.
That's why all this sort of, you know, investigation you talk about seems to me, and I don't want to be critical of someone who's working so hard on this issue, but I will.
I can take it.
Yes. Is a way, a kind of a diversion. You're spinning your wheels because you don't really know, as I don't really know, what to do. So you try to do something, for God's sake, to say, well, you know, let's get this registry going, let's write some letters, let's...
Empower patients to go to their doctors.
But I think we really need a stronger approach that somehow unifies people. And, I mean, empowering patients individually to go to their doctors, we need some sort of way where people can get together and say, go to a central group where they can find a registry of doctors that A will help them. And then, of course, the problem is going to be, how do you get past the roadblock of the federal and state governments? And it seems to me that you didn't get the vote by sitting around begging for it. You went out there and you got your asses kicked before you guys got the vote.
Right. And you're talking about women's right to vote. Absolutely.
You know, and not that it means a hell of a lot to vote these days. It doesn't particularly.
You know, the women's movement really suffered a big setback right after women got the right to vote. A lot of women said, well, we did it, and they went back home to their families and kitchens, and they're where we always wanted to be anyway.
That's true. Well, you know, women are still making 72 cents on every dollar that a man makes, and a woman is...
And dropping,
that's true. I mean, women are totally at a disadvantage. Not to say that men have it easy in this world, but when I was growing up, I always heard the expression, it's a man's world. And, you know, it just says volumes right there. I mean, women are the ones who are beaten and battered and murdered by their partners.
Look at the sign on the highway. It says, men working.
The women we're talking to are Anita Henry and Becky Johnson. I'm Robert Norris. This is Battle of Spears Broadsides. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Call in, you women. Call in, you men. It's 427-3772. If you want more information about MedX, if you want to volunteer to help against the drug war, if you have some ideas we haven't thought about.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, what a good show you have going. I want to share something about people being prosecuted for using marijuana for medical purposes that's not on the picture you're painting yet. This is true, and I don't know how often it happens to other people, but I'm going to tell you this about the situation I know. A woman went in regarding custody of her 9-year-old son to court, Judge Stevens' court, as a matter of fact, and the judge literally discriminated against her over and over and over because the father of this 9-year-old had asserted that she uses pot. The woman has a back injury, probably from being a waitress too long, I don't know. But meanwhile, the father, who is in fact a rageaholic and an alcoholic, the judge, this is a literal quotation, word for word, verbatim, the judge said, without opening the case, I can see that you're not a drinking man, even though the guy was sitting there bloodshot and smelling like the day after a big one in court.
You saw this case?
Absolutely. Well, I saw that day of it.
who was the judge?
I told you, Stevens. And he did other things that were just as off the wall, but my point here is that the prejudice against people using marijuana, even for medical purposes, is so steeped. It's not just the policemen on the street that feel like they have to react if they see it in broad daylight or that are acting on some other whispered directive. It goes much deeper. And I agree with all the things you've said so far about what we need to make more of a movement, but I also think it's really important, I mean, this was stated, but I think it needs more emphasis, that people who are not patients, people that don't have ruined backs like mine or whatever, stand up for medical marijuana. I mean, it's nice, Robert, that you put your voice out there, but people who know that you're against the drug war in general. And what I'm saying is, I think people who understand, even though it might be dialectic for some, people who understand the difference in trying to save one from pain or even premature death, that is a movement in itself. And it's taking on the pharmaceutical companies, and that needs to be stated, and it needs to be done with some guts. You know, it's not just, well, pot is less toxic or more convenient or certainly should be not as regulated. It's a bigger issue. People shouldn't be poisoned by the people that they are paying to provide care for them. So I'd like to see people to stand up, not just the immediate relatives and caregivers, but a lot more people who can think and become part of this thing, because it's not going to be a movement until that happens.
Well, you know, I think that people did stand up for medical marijuana, 70% in this county, and or 80% in this county, and 70% statewide, and it didn't do a shit.
Well, I don't
know. All it did was it put new laws on the books, which, I mean, I'm glad we have them on the books. I'm glad we have. It may have been that's what, you know, empowered Anita to do what she's doing. It would be much harder to do what you're doing, and you'd be doing it in more of an underground fashion without these changes in the law. But I think, you know, it's really hard for people to say, well, I'll saw off half my head and pretend that only medical marijuana is the subject I'm going to talk about. The rest of the drug war is just okie dokie. I mean, it's hard for people to do that.
I'm not saying you should change your course. I'm just saying we need people to stand up, doctors and nurses among them, you know, people who are self-supporting, whether or not they need medicine themselves. And it's not a movement because it got a new law passed. If it dies after the law passes, whether it's because of Janet Reno's military tendencies or whatever, it's a movement if it keeps happening, no matter what kind of response happens in the body politic. It has to have a life of its own, and it has to be more than, in this case, the victims and the patients.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, and of course it affects more than the victims and the patients. It affects, and everybody sees it because everyone feels the fear because they have friends that it impacts and so forth.
And also understated is how much money gets saved. I mean, if you can actually know someone in your own community who's helping grow it in a co-op, that's a different thing than the infrastructure of the
right.
cartels.
Well, did you say your name was Linda?
Yeah.
Yes, Linda, I think eventually that's the way it's going to go. People are going to have to be self-sufficient because cannabis is not inexpensive to grow, nor is it inexpensive to provide to people. That is where this whole movement is going to go. People are going to have to become self-sufficient. Are you familiar with the grow shop that had opened up across the street from Dominican Hospital?
Uh-uh.
There had been a hydro shop that opened up maybe about a year ago, and what I know of the story is this store was doing quite well. I actually had gone into the store to buy some of the things I need because I am growing.
Mm-hmm.
But I had read in the paper that this store had chosen to close down because there had been a police investigation. The police were parking across the street from this hydro shop and filming people go in and out of the shop, taking their license plate numbers, going and checking their PG&E bills, and if they had excessively high bills, they went out and made several arrests, and many people were arrested, and I happen to know of one guy that had snakes and lizards and just had lights going all the time. But what's troubling to me is that the owner of the grow shop, rather than saying, you know, I'm not closing and this is wrong and you shouldn't be doing this, he chose to close down. There is no grow shop in Santa Cruz anymore.
Well, I wonder.
Sounds like McCarthyism.
I don't think we should you know, come down too hard on the grow shop owner. I think it's Sergeant Hart and his little band of narco thugs who are operating under color of law. And I saw them testifying in court with their tall tales last week against two individuals caught up in that grow shop net that we are concerned about. I mean, you're talking about the most powerful agencies in the county and the city, the police departments, people who can shoot you dead and get away with it, people who can take away your liberty for life and get away with it.
But that's not just the police. O.J. Simpson did that.
Yeah,
plenty
but isn't
people
usually
kill
O.J.
And
Simpson
it.
Who does it.
I don't know any police that just go out and shoot and kill for nothing, Robert.
O.J. Simpson is a guy who was one of the few people who actually did get away with it, who actually got, you know, who was taken to court.
Klaus von Bülow got away with it. I wish that
yeah,
I had
some
literature.
Yeah, some rich people get away with
it,
but poor cops get away with it every time they do it. That's the point. Every time they do it, police get away with it. There is no exceptions that I'm aware of.
I would not want to be a policewoman, nor would I want any of my children to grow up and be law enforcement officers. Someone has got to do it.
Do what? Shoot innocent people dead?
Not shoot innocent people. Keep order. keep order and keep law.
What I'm saying to you is that you have police engaging in a drug war that funds their departments, that destroys the lives of innocent people, that produces all the figures that you read about.
We have to change the law then.
Well,
we have to change the law, because when you hire a law enforcement officer, they're doing their job.
If the concentration camp guards are shooting the Jews, you don't just say, we have to change the laws about the Jews. You also hold the people accountable.
Now, why do you
want to
push my button and talk about killing Jews?
Because the concentration camp guards are accountable even if it is done legally. That is to say, it was legal in Germany to concentrate Jews, socialists, gypsies, and various people in
the camps. And I'm gypsy too. Go ahead, rub it in.
It was legal to do this.
Now you're bragging.
And you know, I can see a conservative German saying, we must change the law. We cannot condemn these people who helped the order of our country. They are just following orders. And yes, they are just following orders. But the fact is, they're also responsible.
There is a law enforcement protocol in this county how to respond to people who are medical marijuana patients, or as I like to say, cannabis.
Talk to Jane Kaiser about that.
I can tell you my own experience. I had been down by Westcliff Beach smoking a joint all by myself, and a police officer came up to me, and he said, are you a medical marijuana patient? And I said, yes, I am. And he said, do you have your card with you? And I presented my card from the Maple Street Club. I didn't have my service at that time. And he said to me, that card is not valid, nor is it proof that you're a patient. Do you have a doctor's letter? And I said, yes, I do, but it's home. And he said, I'm going to let you go now, but I want you to go to Kinko's, get your letter shrunk down, and keep it in your wallet.
But now you can have Becky tell you what happened to Jane Kaiser at the metal detector
at the courthouse.
Yes.
Why didn't that woman learn her lesson the first time?
Her lesson?
Well, I am going to have some very unpolitically correct views here.
Yes.
The woman had gone into the courthouse with marijuana and paraphernalia before. She was stopped. It was taken from her. She did it again.
She had a card. She had her card with her, too.
I understand that.
So why aren't you attacking the deputy's department for engaging in this kind of behavior instead of attacking her?
Oh, I'm not attacking her.
Anita, why don't you go through the metal detector with your letter?
First of all, I don't go into the courthouse with my medicine or my paraphernalia when I know I'm going to be passing deputies, just as I would not go to a war protest with my child in my arms.
Why should you be prevented from taking your medicine with you wherever you go? It's inappropriate for deputies to be engaging in those kinds of searches and seizures. You know that.
Well, you know, I don't have to agree that it's right, but I can tell you that the first time that it happened to her, she shouldn't have repeated it. And
why
that's
not?
What because she knew what would happen.
No, it shouldn't have happened a second time. They should have stopped it the first time. They should have responded to complaints about it.
Who should have stopped it?
Our dear friend Sheriff Mark Tracy and all his little minions.
He is my dear friend.
Well, I'm glad he's somebody's friend. He sure as hell isn't my friend. And I don't think he's the friend of most people in this community.
I would strongly disagree with you.
You have a right to disagree with
me. I would disagree with you. But we need people that are on the fringe, Robert. We really do.
Well, thanks.
And we need a lot more people up and out in center stage, too.
Yeah. No, I think probably more people agree with me than agree with you. That doesn't mean I'm not right or I'm wrong, but I think that... You know, it seems quite obvious when they're harassing a 59-year-old woman at the metal detector, and then you're saying, well, why didn't she learn? Don't get harassed by surrendering your rights before you come in. I think that's preposterous.
What I'm saying is the first time it happened...
Give up your rights the next time.
She didn't have to give up her rights.
Sure she did.
They made it very clear to her, when you come into the courthouse, into the court building, you can't medicate in the building.
You can carry your medication into the building.
Why was she bringing her medication and paraphernalia into the courthouse when she knows, first of all,
she thought it was legal?
Why are
and the first time she got in trouble, the first time she got in trouble, she realized it's not something you do.
Well, you know, gosh, Aruni, you know, the clubs in San Jose and the club in San Francisco.
Down, both down.
They got in trouble. So should they not get together and try to do it again because they got in trouble? Is that the argument you're using? Are you saying that people should not...
You're talking about the court, the building. Robert, marijuana is illegal.
Not under 215, it isn't. Not if it's a medical marijuana.
If it's medical marijuana, you can use it and you can grow it. It doesn't say you can carry it into your county courthouse.
Oh, come on. It doesn't
say you can. Was she going to medicate in the courtroom?
It doesn't say you can't. It says you can possess it. That's what it says. And possess means possess wherever you happen to be. unless there's some specific reason not to possess it there.
Well, I will
there
tell you,
no
for
fault.
My own self, because I am a reasonable thinking person, I don't travel with my meds. When I wake up in the morning, I don't feel well, I medicate. I don't feel well in the afternoon, I go home and I medicate.
Yeah, but you're going to blame people who...
I blame nobody. Don't put words in my mouth.
Well, they won't even let me take sips in there.
I think it's quite clear you are blaming her. You're saying, why didn't she learn her lesson? What is that if not blaming her? Come on, let's
it's
be
It's holding her responsible. I'm
well,
not blaming
that's
her.
That's what you mean.
I'm holding her
right.
responsible
you're
for what
holding,
happened to her again and again and again.
You're holding her responsible. Hold the sheriff's department responsible for violating the rights of everybody who comes through that metal detector. They have no business taking people's medication away from them. I assume you believe that.
Well, I don't want to see anybody's medication getting taken away from them, but I certainly do. I do want to see that metal detector there at that courthouse, and I do want the law to work, and I do want order kept.
Tell him what you think.
Mark knows what I think.
Good. Tell him again. He apparently isn't paying much attention, I don't think.
If you're a medical marijuana user, I believe law enforcement is sensitive to your needs. If you're documented and you're a reasonable and responsible user.
You know,
I believe she was trying to make a point and get some media attention for herself. And I happen to know the woman. She was a fine woman.
I know Jane, too.
Not blaming her.
I actually saw the incident. I saw both incidents. I happened to be there, and I don't think she was trying to make any point at all. I think she was in fear. And I think she was just asserting a right the way she asserts rights for people who are on psychiatric wards. And I think that she has... I think you should think again about this, Anita. I think that you should realize that she's an ally in this war that you're fighting against this kind of repression. And the police are not your allies. The police, in this case, are the agents of the enemy in this situation, unfortunately. It may be that they're nice to you in individual cases. I mean, I have all kinds of fine...
No, wait a minute. I'm going to stop you right now. I have not said the police are my friend because they're nice to me. The police are not nice to me. I work with law enforcement on the County Domestic Violence Commission. I work hand in hand with the district attorney, the sheriff, and the chief of police. They are sensitive, humane people. You are on the front lines fighting issues around homelessness, poverty, real life issues, again, that are not endemic to Santa Cruz County. We live well. I was raised in the South Bronx. You don't want to be homeless in the South Bronx.
So
you don't want to be sick in the South Bronx, and you don't want to be harassed by police in the South Bronx.
Right. Well, I have a higher opinion of the Santa Cruz police than I do, for example, the San Francisco police in terms of what the behavior
I just hate
I
to hear you talk so negatively about
but,
them when I know how much
but
they
I
are
have,
doing.
We have to consider them in the milieu they're in. See, that's the point. We can't compare them with the South Bronx because it's not relevant. There's no question.
Well, we're talking about quality of life, and we shouldn't...
It's not a choice between the South Bronx and Santa Cruz. It's a choice between what they should be doing in Santa Cruz and what they're not. That's the point.
I think they're doing a lot more in Santa Cruz than they're doing in a lot of other places, Robert.
That doesn't make any difference. The question is, in Santa Cruz, are they doing what they should be doing and what they can be doing?
Well, who's going to say what they should do?
You and I.
What should they do?
Everyone listening.
Community.
Linda, you are a patient woman.
We've
got to talk, Linda. We've got to get you off the line.
I got a sentence, then I'll hang up. I think it's appropriate to call each individual police officer to account. On the commission that I'm on in the city, we try to praise the ones that do their job the best, but it's very important to have that one-to-one relationship with the ones that are ill-trained or ill-tempered, because they can overreact in a situation where it makes the whole thing a major disaster and deadly. And it happens here.
And I agree, and I totally agree that law enforcement needs guidance and training, especially around this issue. They do need to be trained.
You mentioned this protocol.
Hang on. Are you finished, Linda?
Yes.
Okay. We want to let other people call in, but thank you for calling.
I wanted to ask about this protocol. You said that the law enforcement in Santa Cruz County has a protocol to deal with medical marijuana patients. Is this a public record? Is this, you know, I've never seen this protocol. I'd really like to read it and see what it says.
Before you answer that question, let me remind our listeners you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is the last half hour of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We have fighting women on the lines, fighting women in the studio, and curmudgeonly talk show hosts grumbling away. Come on, let's join the general melee. It's 427-3772. We're talking to Anita Henry, Becky Johnson, and we have coming in from the back the notorious Dennis, back from court, got to give us a report on the shenanigans that are going on in Mad Dog Mulligan's court. Again, phone number 427-3772. please, you were saying?
Well, you know, Becky, I haven't seen the protocol myself, but I have spoken with to Steve Belcher about it, and just my own personal experience, having been down by the beach and stopped by the police, and he didn't grab it from me, didn't throw me up against the wall. He came right out and asked me, are you a medical marijuana user? That is the first question they will ask people. If you say no, they're taking you away. Marijuana is illegal, and until we reschedule it, people who are not medical marijuana users are going to be arrested. Whether that's right or wrong, that's not my issue. That's not where my education and experience is. My education and experience lies in this medical issue.
Oh, come on. You know it's wrong, and I think it's ridiculous for you to claim that this is some sort of objective, well, those guys are just doing their job sort of thing. I mean, that, again...
So what are you saying? They're going out, they wake up in the morning, and they're looking for people to harass?
I'm saying is that it really provides a capricious argument for sometimes arresting people, sometimes not arresting people, searching
That's
people.
The reason for a protocol, so you don't treat people arbitrarily. You treat
what I'm saying is the drug war, and you and I agree on this. I mean, you were talking about this earlier. The drug war provides this rationale for massive, constant, endless police abuse and violation of basic rights of people every day, every hour. I would say probably every 5 or 10 minutes in this, you know, and I mean, I don't know about this county, but certainly in this country.
Well, I agree. That's why we have to dispel the myths about marijuana. I don't believe marijuana is a gateway drug. I don't believe if you take a hit off a joint, you're going to be a heroin addict.
It's not the myths about marijuana. I don't think most people believe that. It has to do with the power structure that benefits from the continued criminalization of these drugs. And that is, see, unfortunately, it's like you're dealing with large interest groups that want to keep it the way it is. The police are one of those large interest groups. They are not a neutral body.
Well, the police are an institution. They are just another arm of the armed forces. They're just like the army.
They make lots of money off of this whole scene is the problem. Their departments are funded by these seizures. And their rationale is all tied up in this crazy drug war. I mean, it's...
Well, it's because the pharmaceutical companies have such powerful lobbies. They're killing people with all these...
Well, pharmaceutical companies are, of course, another problem, but I'm talking about the police department and their interests in maintaining this particular war. And I'm afraid that they have an interest, they continue to believe in that interest, they continue to assert that interest, and your dear Mark Tracy continues to seek federal money for helicopters and things of that sort that fly above us. And I'm afraid that, you know, while you may have a relationship...
Growers who are not ill... And growers who are not associated with the medical marijuana movement should be put in jail.
You can't be serious.
I'm serious.
This is a woman opposing the drug war? You sound like you're contradicting yourself.
I'm not contradicting myself. I am trying to get it agreed upon that medical marijuana can be used by people who have illnesses. I'm not here to advocate legalizing marijuana.
Why not?
Because I'm here to advocate the... law as it was passed, Prop 215.
So you think people should be jailed for using and growing marijuana?
Until the
law is changed.
No.
It's against the law, Robert.
So the law is sacred. So
we've got to change
the
law.
So in Nazi Germany, when they make bad laws, you say until they change the laws about the Jews, let's keep sending them to the camps?
Let's stop with the Nazi Germany.
My Jew button.
I'm sorry. That's the reality. This obsession with laws being sacred.
Robert, how do we change federal laws? I mean, that seems to be a pretty arcane procedure.
You have to buy a congressperson or 200 to change a federal law. That's how you change a federal law. That's how you change a federal law.
You have
hundreds of millions of dollars.
Or you can challenge them legally through the courts as well.
Good luck.
Using the doctrine of necessity, which is one piece of my intake package,
Robert. Person by person paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars to lawyers. This is justice for the rich. Let's not fool ourselves.
Well, why should this movement be any different from any other movement? It's all about the rich. We know that.
It's not about the rich. It's about justice for all of us. That's what we have to realize. And that's why using this legalistic approach, I think, is very short-sighted. You don't say, or keep sending them to jail, because it's the law. You say, the law is wrong, we will not send anyone to jail.
Well, we need to decriminalize it. We need to decriminalize it. It's not a crime.
By telling people that people should continue to be sent to jail while it's the law.
I think growers who are not ill are profiteers. I think they profit off the suffering of other people. I think they make massive amounts of money. In my personal experience, and let me qualify everything I'm saying tonight, I didn't say this earlier, I am here as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
I am not here representing the County Women's Commission.
Mm-hmm.
I am not here representing the County Domestic Violence Commission. I am here as a mature woman, grandmother, provider of cannabis, speaking only for myself.
Mm-hmm. So you, all you commission people, are going to have to come in and represent yourselves on this issue, and perhaps on every other issue.
And we will invite all the members of the Women's Commission to come in individually if they...
Sheriff Mark Tracy, feel free to join us in the studio.
Sheriff Tracy, too.
I'll have a pie for you personally when you arrive. Actually, I'd be happy to talk to you with or without a pie. Tracy is, I'm afraid I have very little respect for this man based upon how he his sense of the need for curfew laws, his complete contempt for the process of internal review in the Sheriff's Department, and as I said, this prosecution of the drug war. And I really...
including that, that person who got arrested for buying a light bulb.
Oh, yeah, the most recent thing at the grow shop. That was a case that came up a week ago. A man got arrested.
Buy a light bulb. Go to jail.
Well, he wasn't arrested for it. They simply put out a search warrant for it, searched his house, and found he grew plants. I would like to, at some point, I don't know if we should do it now, and again, if any of you listeners want to weigh in, I mean, I will babble on forever here.
I want to hear what Dennis has to say.
Yeah, let's, you know, Anita, you've got lots to say, and we've only begun, you know, to really...
Robert, I really hope you'll invite me back.
Always. In fact, you're invited back for Sunday if you're free. Or you can come back next week. But, yeah, please, you are definitely invited back.
I'll be back next week.
Yeah. Okay.
Same time, same
That's
station.
Great. Continue this discussion. And please, give me some more...
And you know what I want to talk about when I come back next
time?
I want to talk a little bit more about domestic violence in the county.
Okay.
I want to talk about some issues that are facing girls and women, particular in this county, because that's actually my field of expertise.
Talk about Chief Belcher's gun-toting peacemakers who shot up Brian Andrus's house and with a baby and his wife nearby. That's something we can discuss too, perhaps.
I'll have to do my homework then.
Indeed.
Speak to you then.
Yes.
Good
thank
night,
you for
Robert.
Coming. Been talking
You're
to
so
Anita
welcome.
Henry.
Becky, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming, Anita.
We're going to have a little musical break, and then we're going to bring out the more ragged, down-home, homeless-type types who have somehow invaded the studio. If you have any questions and you want to get in touch, with Anita at MedX, the phone number is 425-3444. And whatever my disagreements with her, here's someone who's really doing something around the issue of medical marijuana, while some of us radicals are just sitting at home and smoking or flapping our gums, man. Let's hear a little music, and then let's catch the last segment of Bathrobe's Pierre's Broadside.
The cow. we must use climb up, getting out of the system. Give me bonuses, overtime, sick leave, and paid all the days of a pension. Then I can strike, work to rule, or go below, or object to conditions and hours for wages. Will give me the power to have a say in the world where a person who happens to be female is supposed to be happy to spend all her time at love. Lady Murder stop on the bacon fire, 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 Happy folder, hand holder, onion chopper, mess mopper, button sewer, tool sewer, tidy up, a pizza supper, money stretcher, running fetcher. Cane maker, bun maker, early waker, bed maker, breakfast maker, lunch maker, tea maker, sandwich maker.
Lady, what do you do all day? Lady, it's your only life. When they ask you, what do you say?
Oh, I don't work. I'm nothing but a housewife.
And we're still here at 96.3 FM, about to have our next guest. I've actually come back from a demonstration, two demonstrations in San Francisco yesterday. One of them at the City Hall, where the Coalition on Homelessness was giving its opinion in the no uncertain terms to supervisors around a crazy new piece of legislation that Amos Brown, who's a supervisor up there, to be distinguished from Willie Brown, has put forward. I'm going to read a little bit about this so-called Pedestrian Safety Act before we get into what's been happening down here with our own attacks on homeless people in the court of Mad Dog or Meat Grinder Mulligan, as I call him. Here's from the Street Sheet, July 1999. As my eyes adjusted to the gloom of the cramped interior of the San Francisco Police Department truck, I realized I was not alone, having just been rudely manhandled by a truncheon-wielding Neanderthal whose apparent mission was to keep this section of Powell Street safe from the likes of a freelance urban entrepreneur, a panhandler, like yours truly, and safe for the photo-hungry hordes of tourists out on a spree fueled by disposable income and Starbucks. My gluey eyes slowly registered the rest of the human booty today's take had produced. To my right, sponge still dripping soapy water, sat a freelance car washer. Next to him, a dazed-looking Scientologist whispering in fearful earnestness to a bewildered Girl Scout, trembling hands still clutching a tear-dappled box of pecan sandies. She was comforted by the security guard and the investment banker, both legs shackled together, half-smoked cigarettes still dangling from indignant and righteous lips, respectively. Well, what this is all about is it's a satirical look into the future about what will happen if the so-called Pedestrian Safety Act in San Francisco is passed. And this is what this is. On April 19th, Heinous Amos, that's Amos Brown, introduced a piece of thinly veiled and poorly crafted legislation designed to empty San Francisco streets and medians of those pesky panhandlers. This time the ruse is obvious: public safety. This particular piece of uninspired garbage is trying to be forced through the bowels of City Hall as the Pedestrian Safety Act. Willie Brown, the hand inside the puppet, states, "We have had an alarming increase in pedestrian fatalities in the last year, and I will simply not tolerate activities that contribute to these avoidable deaths. While the number of pedestrian deaths in the city practically doubled from 1997 to 1998, the SFPD was unable to come up with even one instance linked to panhandling, and has even balked at the request of the Coalition on Homelessness to provide these pressing statistics. That's okay, though. Josh Brandon, homeless deaths researcher for the Department of Public Health, reviewed 14,000 records from the medical examiner's office spanning a period from 1990 to March 31, 1999, and reported, quote, no motor vehicle accidents resulting in death that were caused directly or indirectly by the actions or position of any panhandler during this time period. Ironically, the only known death of a panhandler during the last 9 years involved two tourists, one of whom shot a man four times in the head and chest outside a hotel on Taylor Street for soliciting change. The proposed ordinance fails to establish any causality between people on median strips and pedestrian fatalities, and has no basis in fact at all. It is equally malicious in its ignorance of constitutional law by infringing on the right to remain in a public place, Recently, the U.S. Supreme Court held that a Chicago anti-loitering statute aimed at cracking down on gang activity was invalid and unconstitutional, not only for interfering with the public's right to remain in public space, but because it failed to inform the cops and the public about what exactly constituted illegal activity. San Francisco's Pedestrian Safety Act, named by Supervisor Brown, is even more ludicrous in that it would prohibit anybody from being on medians and curbs for more than 5 minutes for any reason at all. This will have a tremendous impact on everybody from labor unions to day laborers, Girl Scouts, to Muni commuters. Another glaring example of the haste and stupidity exhibited by this hate tract is that it fails to define curb as, quote, a rim of joined stones, concrete, metal, or the like forming an edge of a sidewalk. It also defines curb as anything that restrains or controls. Which is it? The answer is obvious. Anyway, this is a good article on page 2 of Street Sheet talking about the Pedestrian Safety Act, which really is the Push Out the Panhandlers Act, which San Francisco really rejected by a narrow margin. Proposition, I believe it was called N, or M, actually, back in the early 90s. It was proposed by then-mayor and formerly police chief Frank Jordan, and it was rejected. So here's another panhandling law, this one disguised as a Public Safety Act. That's, of course, how, and I perhaps will be criticized for bringing up the Führer again, one of my favorite historical analogies. Hitler brought up a lot of legislation as public safety legislation, but its real aim was to go after certain minority groups. In San Francisco, the homeless are a minority group. Well, they are a growing minority group. And Amos Brown is looking to election time, again, scapegoating homeless people. We have a homeless person in the studio with us, however, who looks a little bit too well-dressed. You probably wouldn't know he was homeless if you saw him in the street. He is a vehicle-dwelling person and not really homeless. Belly up to the mic there, Dennis. How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good. Now, Dennis, you I read earlier your statement to the court, and you just came from, I guess, it turns out it was Mulligan's court.
Hooligan.
Yeah, Hooligan's court. Hooligan. You were there for a sleeping ban ticket that had gone to fine, gone to warrant. You once went back before and had the warrant recalled. You were told your warrant was illegally issued because they can't issue a warrant to you that requires you to be put in jail for an infraction, which is the lowest form of so-called crime, sleeping being the so-called crime here.
Failure to pay an infraction is also not a jailable offense.
Failure to pay an infraction is not a jailable offense. Now, what you this time you confronted another quote judge unquote. The first time you confronted a guy called Patterson, and this time you confronted the meat grinder himself, meat grinder Mulligan. What was that all about?
Yeah, it's come full circle. I came back to where I started at 10 months ago. This ticket issued in September of '98. And now after 10 months, I told Mulligan that this ticket has just been self-perpetuating and this ordinance is still, to me, a clear violation of human rights, and I could not in good conscience pay a ticket.
The ordinance you're talking about, of course, is the Santa Cruz City Sleeping Ban 6.36.010.
Yeah.
And this ordinance prohibits sleeping after 11 o'clock at night.
Until 8:30 in the morning.
Right.
And then I told him I could not in good conscience pay a ticket for sleeping because it would be a violation of my heartfelt principles. Secondly, I told him that this ticket was issued at 8 o'clock in the morning with only a half hour remaining on the violation time period of this unjust ordinance, and I felt that it was purely harassment.
You know, I actually, I did read that entire statement. What did he say when you told him all this?
He just let me continue. And then I said, on the morning that my case was initially heard, I was in his court, actually, and he was the one who convicted me and made me become a sleep criminal. So I reminded him of that, and I also reminded him of the fact that I told him at the point when he asked me how I wanted to pay it, that I did not want to pay it and he should lock me up. He then told me, I reminded him that he told me that sleeping was an infraction and not a jailable offense. And so I told him that also at my last court appearance that in answer to the first warrant that was issued, I challenged the validity of the warrant.
And in fact, referee Patterson found that the warrant was improperly issued, correct?
Patterson said that the warrant was in fact invalid and a mistake because they can't issue a warrant according to Penal Code 1205 because I have to be told at the time that I'm convicted that jail is a possibility.
And Mulligan said no, because it's an infraction. It can't be a possibility.
Yeah, but at this time when I tried to remind him of all this, he cut me off. And when I started reminding him that this warrant was invalid, he said, well, wait a minute, what are you planning to do here today? And I said, well, I've already told you I do not intend to pay it. And he says, well, he looked over at the clerk and says, we're going to send this upstairs. What do we have available? So they scheduled me for Wednesday, the 21st of July, at 8:30 in the morning. In Department 6, so I'm not sure what his plan is here.
That's Judge Art Danner.
Oh, I get to see all the good guys.
Yes, you do.
Well, first, it was Patterson, and now it was Mulligan, and they're both playing pass the buck. They don't want to deal with it, so they're sending it up to the other court.
Well, as I recall, what the situation is you've twice had your warrant recalled. I guess your warrant will continue to be recalled until it gets through this next court process on the 21st.
He's just plain telling you I'm free to go right now because the 21st is just a week or so away.
Right, so you don't have a warrant at the moment. But
right.
but on the 21st, it'll go back to... you'll be before the court of a judge who could find you in contempt. That is the shortcut that some of these judges, as I was telling you,
that's
before,
what I had a feeling
use. Now, of course, what we need here is to have an attorney step in and really defend your right to be freed of this endless cycle of court harassment, court and police harassment, because I think, you know, the case has been effectively made that for a sleeping ban case, which is an infraction, a non-vehicular infraction, even though you were found in your vehicle, because it's not a moving violation.
It's a municipal.
It's a municipal code. It's not a vehicular code. Mm-hmm. There is a code section which allows them to go after you for failing to pay a vehicular fine, and that's a misdemeanor, and you would be subject to jail for that. But there is no such code that I'm aware of, and I could be wrong, but it's never been brought to my attention, and it certainly wasn't there 5 years ago, because sleeping ban people were accused of the sleeping ban used this defense successfully 5 years ago in numerous cases. What was done back then was Commissioner Salazar and possibly even Judge Kelly took the cases off the calendar rather than pursue them further. The argument was you can't be made to pay a fine, you can't be forced to do community service, and you can't be jailed. Well, all they can do is they can levy the fine, and then they can sue you civilly for the amount of the fine and try to confiscate your property or garnish your wages. So in theory, they could go after you there. And we suggested people use this, those of us in HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a homeless activist group, because we felt that it would cause so much trouble for the city to go after poor people who don't have much property simply to harass them for sleeping, and also hopefully bad publicity if the Sentinel ever woke up, which of course isn't always an unlikely prospect, but you know, hopefully from some quarter, that they would just give it up. So now we have your case going back to court on Wednesday, July 21st at what time?
8:30 in the morning.
8:30 a.m.
In Department 6.
What is the actual proceeding? It's going to be arraignment, it's going to be disposition, it's going to be...
He's just moving the warrant hearing over to that.
Warrant hearing. So perhaps all you attorneys out there, when you finish suing the doctors for not letting people get access to medical marijuana, turn to help old Dennis here, Dennis actually argues his own case quite eloquently, but I'd like to see him supported by an attorney who's also versed on the facts and is prepared to make arguments. Are you open to having a legal counsel and help on this?
I'd be happy to, because I spend a lot of time at the law library otherwise.
So we're talking again to...
Dennis Rehm.
Dennis Rehm, and Dennis, I understand you had some support in court. Did people show up and...
There were a couple people there who were there to support me, yes.
Really? Did they throw pies at Mulligan? Was there any...
I think they would have liked to have done that, but one of the persons did go up to the stand with me when I went up to speak with Mulligan, yes.
Really? Who was that?
That was Bernard.
Oh, good for him. Good for him. Yeah, it's a little-known fact, but it's true. You can have a friend come with you if you feel intimidated by the court, which, by the way, is always good to do when you're in the company of patriarchal, power-hungry authorities, whether they be doctors or judges or lawyers or experts of any sort, to have someone you know and you trust with you who can help you to kind of maintain your own sense that, first of all, you have the right to assert your rights, that you are there, you know, to get justice or information or whatever you're trying to get. I think it's useful to have a friend with you when you go to the doctor. And because doctors, even though supposedly they're being paid to give you services, often have attitudes and expectations, and you are conditioned to behave in ways toward them that are not particularly helpful for you. And the same is true with lawyers. Anyway, that's just my blathering. I think it's good blathering, and I recommend it. If you want to talk to Dennis about his experiences in court, or you want to perhaps weigh in with a few of your own thoughts, the sleeping ban and how you're being treated in the Santa Cruz area for essentially innocent behavior, because that's what sleeping is. I'm sorry, Catherine Byers. I'm sorry, Marty Wormhout. That is innocent behavior. Our supervisor Wormhout and our mayor Byers seem to feel that it's okay to keep this a crime and okay to avoid the issue of increased shelter for homeless people. And that is really, really quite unfortunate. But I think the rest of us are aware that it's a basic need, not to mention, and therefore has to be considered a basic civil right to be able to sleep. Any comments on this, Dennis, that you have? Or?
Only that we're all going to sleep every night, so they might as well lay off, because all they're going to do is jam up the courts. My case is now 10 months old, and I've appeared 5 times in court. If everybody were to do the same thing, maybe they'd get tired of it. You know, don't go in and plead guilty. Stand up for your rights.
Yeah, I mean, there are numerous defenses you can use. There's the ICORN defense, which essentially has been upheld at the highest levels of the state, which is that if you can, you have a perfect right to assert necessity, and that may be even something that you might want to do, though maybe a little late in the game here. It's a little bit late in the game for us here. It looks like, again, nipping at our heels is that man about the Redwoods, Uncle Dennis, is coming in to detoxify a toxic environment, quite a task. And Dennis is taking off his coat, and this is Uncle Dennis, Dennis number two, I might say, and rolling up his sleeves. He already has his sleeves. We've got cutoffs. That's not quite fair. Let's see. There's a lot of stuff we didn't get to today. I'd kind of hoped we'd get a call in from our Yugoslavia expert, Shana, but didn't hear from her. We did have a very interesting conversation with Anita Henry, Commissioner on Women's Commission of Santa Cruz County, and the Commissioner on the County Domestic Violence Commission. Again, speaking completely off those subjects and not as representative of either of those bodies. And she's going to be back in a week talking to us again. We're going to be back on Sunday at 11 o'clock in the morning for our longer version of Bathroom Spears Broadsides, 2.5 hours. At that time, I will be going through the CPRB, Citizens Police Review Board update. Did a lot of taping last Monday of what went on there. Very interesting back and forth, though the outcome was not particularly satisfying for most of us. There was, I guess, some progress made. We're also going to be looking into the KPFA protests, which are probably happening tonight. Last night, uh-huh. Maybe we'll get an update on that from Dennis.
Not much of an update. I just had the announcement that they started at 5 o'clock.
Right. Yeah, I know that we're all due to come back at 5. Those of us who went last night, who chose to return, and there were at least 1,000 people there last night. Quite a crowd, and quite a happy crowd, quite a mixed crowd, from, you know, very young, well, from babies all the way up to really old folks who really were saddened and by the betrayal of the Pacifica Foundation and how it's treating KPFA and community radio. And I'm hoping that Free Radio Berkeley will be sort of showing up there. They have been off the air for a year, on and off, mostly off the air, and they're planning to come on again. I'm going to sign off myself to give Dennis the full benefit of his 2 hours, reluctant as I am to do that.
It's
only fair, as they say. Fair, fair. You know, life isn't fair. That's what Jimmy Carter used to say. Thank you, Dennis, for being with us.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners. Stay tuned for Uncle Dennis.
Daddy John Dine was a friend of mine. Lived here by the sea, down on the streets of Santa Cruz. He'd always laugh at me. Abby and I went to church one night, thank God, and ate our fill. Asked him if he had any money, give me a fake dollar bill. Where's Happy? He's gone away. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Oh, where's Happy? Shot down today. And it's best the police are happy. Sadness is here to stay. Happy was as harmless as a butterfly. Loved everyone he met. He never left the 60s. Didn't really care for the internet. One day he was grooving to some tunes, doing the Happy Bop, when a bullet entered his chest. Came from a Santa Cruz cop. Where is Happy? Shot down today. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Oh, where is Happy? He's gone away. And I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to stay. But people like Happy, I do believe. Heaven is great, great spirits. You know, like whatever you got here, less of, you got more there. Could happen. So I think he's up there. I think he's looking down. And he's probably saying, hey man, right on, I know you. Power to the people. Where is Happy? He's gone away. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Where is Happy? Shot down today. And I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to say. Yeah, I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to stay.
It's going to be one of those nights, I could tell already. Let's see here. Thanks, Bob. Well, it's Uncle Dennis. And it's 8 o'clock, and it's Thursday night. And there's no CD in the case. So I got no theme song. I'm hosed. I'm totally hosed. Now, if you've been around the station for the last week or so, and I'm going to start looking in some of these other CD cases and see if it happened to get in there. But I'm flabbergasted. I am totally and completely flabbergasted. Because what's Earth First Radio without the Earth First theme song? Well, I don't know. Tell you what I'm going to do. I've got another CD here, and we're going to put that one on while I look for the Earth First theme song, because, frankly, I don't know what else to do. We'll be back in a minute.
There's a nuclear demon. To our time, and he travels through the desert on the Arizona power lines. Mark Davis and Mark Baker, and Margaret Millett too. They looked up at those towers, oh, they knew what they must do. Oh, ain't it grand? Out in the desert, with a blowtorch in your hand. Get off the crash and out on you, you know. Now the FBI was watching, so they sent in Michael Tate. A phony Vietnam veteran vowed to guard the fascist state. Well, he won their trust and friendship. To his flaws, they all were blind. Till those flares lit up the skies above the Arizona power lines. Oh,
torch in your hand. Oh, take it slow. It could all come crashing down on you, you know. Was behind the scheme. Well, they jailed the founder of Earth first, but they did not stop the dream. So should you walk at Abby's desert and see a little flame that shines, don't you say a prayer for the next to dare the Arizona power lines. Oh, ain't it grand? Out in the desert, you'll blow a torch in your hand.
Back in town, and boy, how that town grew. They never hurt nobody, but